Hello and welcome to Press TV's debate. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. In disarray is one way the United Kingdom can be described leading up to its Brexit deadline. After more than 2 years of negotiations with the European Union, London seems as confused as ever and very uncertain about the direction it should go now. Prime Minister Theresa May may be about to be removed via a coup by members of her own cabinet. What is next for the UK, Theresa May, and the Brexit? Well, stay with us on this debate to find out. First of all, we're going to start it off by crossing over to London, joined by Press TV's correspondent Robert Carter. Will Robert fill us in on the latest twists in this Brexit saga?
Well, it's been a funny old year, actually, given the fact that so much has happened, so many twists and turns taking place within this ongoing Brexit saga. But yet we're still virtually no clearer, and we've virtually achieved nothing compared to where we were at the end of last year. The British Prime Minister's deal remains unaccepted by the British Parliament, and now, as you rightly say, there are reports surfacing that her own MPs are rallying around behind her back to try and oust her, which could push the country into another general election by the end of this week. So, of course, there's the uncertainty about the leadership as well as the uncertainty surrounding the future of Brexit. Now, very quickly, what are we going to see potentially this week? The British Prime Minister, Theresa May, will likely push to try and get her deal voted through once again. That will be the third attempt this year to get her Brexit deal approved before the deadline, which is this Friday coming. There will also be amendments pushed. So on Monday, the British Prime Minister will announce her plan of action going forward. If British parliamentarians reject her plan, then there could be more votes this week, which will be potentially seeing MPs voting on whether they want another Brexit referendum once again, as well as cancelling Brexit altogether. Then there's also the talk about a potential delaying of Brexit. The European Union has accepted that if a deal is finally agreed this week, before the deadline, they will extend it, I believe, until May to give it enough time to get it through, legally speaking. But if there's no deal at all, then the only delay they've agreed so far is until early April, which will essentially give the British Parliament the opportunity to essentially tell the European Union, what do you want? What do you want going forward? Do you want Brexit or not? So a lot of uncertainty, a lot of votes likely to take place. And at the end of the week, who knows, there could be a general election, there could be an empty prime minister position, there could be a deal, there could be no deal. So not much more to tell you other than that, I'm afraid.
All right, total confusion, that's what it sounds like. Thanks so much for that update, Robert. Well, let me introduce our guest to the program, political analyst Adriel Cassanta out of London and political activist and filmmaker Graham Hughes out of Liverpool. Thank you both for being with us. Let's start this off. And Graham in Liverpool, just why hasn't London been able to decide exactly how it's going to deal with the European Union and the Brexit after 2 years?
Because what Britain's doing is possibly one of the most complex things that's ever been done by a modern government. And we're doing it the worst possible time to be doing it. And one of the problems that the government's had from the start with this is that the people who promised Brexit promised a lot of stuff that is simply undeliverable. And we've gone from sunlit uplands to mitigating a disaster. Nobody thinks that Brexit's going to make them better off anymore. Companies are leaving. We're seeing £1 trillion worth of investments leave the city of London. Foreign direct investment has fallen off a cliff. And if we leave without a deal, it's not just going to be catastrophic for British society and the British economy. It's also going to take our standing in the world down massively, because it means a violation of the Good Friday Agreement, which is the most important post-war treaty that Britain has signed.
Okay, well, Adriel, your take. Now, the deadline for the British government, it was originally March 29th, and it needed an extension, which can now be set for May 22nd. However, what is likely to change in these 6 weeks to help London make a decision that it didn't happen in the past 2 years?
Well, thank you for asking me this question. Well, the answer is very simple. It is a precise plan from the current Tory government to avoid Brexit, because we know that Theresa May, in the first place, when the David Cameron was a prime minister, she was in a camp of Remainers. And she's not the best person to deliver, as same as the entire Conservative Party. So, as the London correspondent of your TV said, it is ridiculous that the third time Theresa May deal will be put into the vote, while we know that two times her deal was voted down. So I'm not sure what has to happen in order to change people's mind or MPs' mind. And also, I think that what is happening within the Conservative Party at the moment is trying to, you know, to de-escalate the pressure on Theresa May by postulating a change of the leadership, where we very well know that Mr. Leadington, Mr. Gove, and also Boris Johnson, who recently changed his hairstyle and started to do the training and trying to be fit in order to be a leader, they're trying to somehow go into Theresa May's shoes, but they will not change anything. What these people are doing, they are talking Brexit, but they are playing on the sentiment of the British people, the sovereign sentiment, but they don't have any reasonable solution to the Brexit. So this is the main problem. So people have been just, you know, deceived by the Brexiteers and the politicians who promised that they will execute the people's will, which occurred during the referendum in 2016. But there's no party which can execute British people will. And it is a huge downgrading for the Britain, such a great country in the international arena, that this democracy doesn't work very well.
Well, now what, basically, Graham? What do you think is going to happen? What direction will the UK go in? Is it going to stay, basically, will the government leave the EU without a deal, agree to the EU deal, go towards another referendum? I mean, where do you see all of this going?
I don't know. I mean, if Theresa May truly was a Remainer and she wanted to stop us getting out of the EU, there were ways of doing it. First of all, the first referendum was obviously riddled with not just lies, but also illegality. Vote Leave and Vote and Leave.eu were both fined by the Electoral Commission for breaking the law on four separate occasions between them. So that would be one way of sorting out the mess that referendum started, by saying, well, it was actually a mess. You know, it didn't go through as it should have done, and we're going to have to rerun it. The other option she's got for another referendum is to say, well, this isn't a referendum on whether he should be a member or not. This is a referendum on my deal. It might come down to that. But as to the reports in the papers today about Theresa May, the cabinet turning against her, well, there was a vote of no confidence in Theresa May that she won back in December. And as far as I'm aware, that protects her from any other vote of no confidence for another year, so from that date. So she's all right till December. I can't see any way that they could unseat her internally. I think this week's going to be very interesting. I think we're going to see a lot of options put on the table. But even as an ardent Remainer, I don't particularly want the government to go down the route of just revoking Article 50, because I don't think that heals the divisions that have occurred in British society. I think we need another referendum in which cheating is not allowed, in order to achieve that.
Well, what do you think, Adrian? Do you think that there is going to be another referendum?
I think that yes, I think that it is highly likely that we will see another referendum. We know that on Saturday there was a huge march. The petition has been signed by a lot of people. And I think that there's a lot of pressure from the outside, both from the Remainers in the EU and the Remainers within the British political class, not exactly being an active politicians, hence Tony Blair. Who was lecturing President Macron how he can help the EU to allow United Kingdom to stay in the European Union structures. Just wanted to address the healing of the wounds within the society. I think that the citizens have very short memory, as same as with regards to the Iraqi war in 2003, where Tony Blair delivered a severe lies with disregard, and he hasn't been, you know, punished for lying to this country and bringing and sending the troops to Iraq. So what my option is, and I'm talking from the legal point of view, is that unfortunately United Kingdom will take part in the European elections in 2019 May. They will have either three different options, either to have renegotiate further, or to have the referendum, or to forget about the Brexit. And I think that all the politicians who are in power, even within the Conservative Party and the opposition party, the Labour Party, are in favour in some sort, shape or form staying in the EU. So I'm not sure whether the referendum which took place in 2016 will be delivered. So my bet is on United Kingdom taking part of in a European election in May 2019, and either we will have referendum or they will renegotiate the agreement, or we will have the general elections. And I think that general elections will change nothing. And unfortunately, the United Kingdom will stay in the EU structures, but not on the honest terms, but after the several years of, you know, lying to the British citizens and those who voted for leaving the EU. And this is a sad day for the democracy around the world.
Well, Graham, what do you think that this uncertainty means exactly for the UK? And how does this affect the EU also?
Well, the uncertainty affects the UK, obviously, in terms of trade and our economy. We've got big companies pulling out. We've got big companies moving their headquarters elsewhere. Like I mentioned earlier, we've had £1 trillion worth of assets moved out of the City of London. So we lose all the tax that we would have got on the profits from those assets. And we lose the tax on the people working to handle those assets as well, which would be highly taxed individuals. So that's less money coming into the exchequer in the UK straight off. And we've left the European Medicines Agency. We've also lost the Banking Authority as well. And these are big industries that, although they might not employ that many people in London, the ancillary staff and everything else, that the knock-on effect throughout the economy is massive. And it's going to take a very long time to fix everything that's happened so far. And we haven't even left. We're in a mess. The country's in an absolute mess. And the only way of solving this that gets these politicians, and you know, you're right, they're lying. They've been lying since the start of all this about how great it will be to go out on our own and negotiate our own trade agreements, when basic mathematics tells you that Britain on its own has a much smaller economy, a much smaller population than the rest of Europe. And so if you're going to get a good trade deal, you need more customers, you need more money to spend to get a better trade deal. So we're going to go from being a senior partner in the EU, one of the top three, to being a junior partner in a trade deal with China and with India, because they're bigger than us. And in the case of China and the United States, they've got a lot more money.
Well, what about it, Adriel? When we look at the situation, there would be many that talk about the sophistication usually of British politics, and that the British politicians have always been very astute in calculating what they do around the world. How did all this happen? Are you telling me that none of this was calculated by David Cameron, when he called for the Brexit. Tell me your take on the beginning of all of this, the roots.
Well, the roots are, thank you for asking me for the roots, because I've started as a chairman of the International Affairs Committee of the oldest conservative think tank in the United Kingdom, which is BO Group. And I've presented a white paper for the Bruges Group behind the Lord Tebbit white paper titled The British Euroscepticism. And we trace it back when David Cameron and his camp, including Boris Johnson and Theresa May, were Remainers. And we remember that it was a campaign called Project Fear, when he was trying to discourage people from voting in order to stay in the EU. But the general mood of the people who were asked, do you want to remain or to stay in the EU, was to leave in order to regain their sovereignty. There was no discussions with regard to the economy and the impact, because it was based on the pre-assumption that Britain is a global player, that United Kingdom, due to its past colonial past related to its trade links to the Commonwealth, New Zealand, America predominantly, and its former colonies within the Commonwealth structures, will have an upper hand. And it will be a straight competitor to the European Union. Unfortunately, these pre-assumptions and these estimates provided by those who are unwilling to deliver Brexit in the first place, but in order to hold to the power, because the whole idea of the of putting Theresa May as a prime minister in the United Kingdom was to keep the Tory party in power. And it wasn't a move to deliver Brexit, but it was a maneuver to hold the power.
So let me just understand what you're saying. So are you saying that the Tories basically were willing to risk the country in order just to stay in power? I mean, because understanding what you're saying, that this has been to the detriment of the UK. So are you telling me that power was more important for them in all of this than what is actually best for the country?
Of course, the Tory party is the machinery to hold to the power rather than to helping the people. We know that the United Kingdom, and London especially, where I'm residing, is in a very poor condition, also due to the Brexit situation around the country. So this is the whole idea of party politics in the government here in the United Kingdom, in order to stay in power, not to deliver what people are willing to have.
Let me get Graham in on this. Graham, your perspective, because at the end of the day, of course, we know how politicians work the world over. But if the country is really going to suffer because of a decision like this, which, of course, they do live in that same country, why do you think that they actually made the decision? It wasn't just to stay in power. Is there something else behind this decision? Your analysis of the overall situation.
I think it just comes down to ideology, and there's a good chunk of the British population and the political population who have a supreme sense of arrogance. We think that we're better than everywhere else on the planet. And when it comes down to it, we're quite a small country with a better economy than we should have, to be fair. But that's because it's based on hundreds of years of us going around the world and basically taking what we wanted from poorer countries. And it came up to the 1970s, and we couldn't do that anymore. And the British economy took a nosedive. And in response to that, we joined what became the EU. And as a process, we've made our, you know, at the moment, we've got our 27 closest trading partners in the EU make up 50% of our trade. And when we look at the trade with just Ireland alone, we trade more with Ireland than we do with Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, all put together. And the idea that this lie that went out, you know, that we'll be free to make our own trade deals
okay.
was incredibly arrogant, because it made it sound like we just tell people what to do. And
all right.
Just,
well, I'm so sorry. I have to interrupt you. We're out of time. But an interesting discussion. Thanking both of you, political analyst Adriel Cassanda out of London, political activist and filmmaker Graham Hughes out of Liverpool. And as always, we appreciate you viewers being with us on another debate. I'm Marzia Hashimi, thanking you all, and hope to see you next time.